You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Jada Lucas.
And I'm Leanne LaRose. It's President's Day. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, February 19th, 2018.
We joked about the fact that people would say, "What, you play postmodern jazz?" And we would say, "No, we play modern jazz, but we're a postmodern quartet in the sense that there's a shifting number of people associated with us."
Later in the program, WFHB correspondent Michael Glab speaks with IU political science professor Jeff Isaac about his work with the Postmodern Jazz Quartet, growing up in Queens in academia. That's coming up on today's edition of Big Talk with Michael Glab.
Also, coming up in the next half hour, Sarah Yang is a high schooler who volunteers with Global Gifts and Mother Hubbard's Cupboard. Her story is coming up later in the program on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, your daily headlines.
We will not stop you.
I respect
we you. We want to listen to you.
In all sincerity, they killed Dr. King.
No, just a minute. That's not going to work.
So
that's not
going to
work.
You're going to have me arrested?
No, I'm not going to have you arrested.
Because I can sit here and talk all day long.
Well, we can all leave. You can talk to him by yourself,
and
right?
And we won't be at every meeting.
I'm asking you to let the mayor finish his comments.
Tell me right now if they are willing to reverse this.
Sir, thank you, Al. Thank you, Al. Appreciate it. Thank you. I'm happy to meet with you in the next 2 days. No, the time is not now. The time is not now for a meeting.
Protesters disrupted Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton's State of the City address this past Friday. The protesters, members of the Bloomington chapter of Black Lives Matter, were voicing their concerns about a recent acquisition of an armored vehicle by the Bloomington Police Department. Before his speech was disrupted, Mayor Hamilton addressed the nearly $250,000 purchase, which has been met with criticism by community members over the past several days.
I know the past several days have seen one particular issue arise about a purchase of a new armored vehicle to update and replace one formerly used by the police department. I think we in government collectively did not air enough of those questions and concerns publicly early enough, and we're making up time now. In fact, I have asked the Board of Public Safety to hold a public hearing in coming days explicitly to review the policies, procedures, and training protocols that will accompany this vehicle. I've also asked the police department to conduct another public session, as was done earlier this week, in an upcoming evening to continue the dialogue about when, how, and why this vehicle can be used for public safety, and importantly, when, how, and why not to be used as well.
The protesters argue the process for the purchase of the armored vehicle was not transparent enough. One citizen argued that the public hearing for the purchase of the vehicle was held on a Tuesday afternoon, a time when most residents were at work and unable to make it to the meeting to voice their concerns. The protesters also argued that the vehicle is the first step in a militarization of the Bloomington and Monroe County Police Force. Mayor Hamilton stated during the speech that, in light of recent events involving heavily armed and dangerous individuals, the vehicle is necessary not only to protect the police force, but to protect the community in the event of an attack in Bloomington.
I just want to note that I have been convinced that in the face of the world we face, this tool of an armored vehicle is important to protect our protectors. It is important to protect our protectors in dangerous situations and to increase the chance that, God forbid, any of us. No, we're
just a moment closer to us having this killing machine.
The mayor ended his address early after protesters repeatedly interrupted him. A full, uninterrupted version of Hamilton's address is available on Bloomington's community access television services. Bloomington Black Lives Matter stated in a press release to WFHB that they plan on staging another protest during tomorrow's city council meeting. The city council meets from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at Bloomington City Hall.
So, with a bullhorn, it's difficult for you to hear. We're not going to arrest anybody. I will publish these remarks so you can hear them all. And I'm very proud of what the city's doing. You have seen a demonstration of Bloomington tonight. And we will continue. Thank you for all you are doing in Bloomington. Thank you. The meeting is adjourned.
Meeting is adjourned.
Reporting for WFHB, I'm Jonah Chester.
Black Lives Matter organizer and State of the City protester Vox Booker will join Bloomington Police Department Chief Mike Dekoff live on tonight's Bring It On. That's at 6 p.m. on Bring It On here in WFHB.
Jurors convicted an Indianapolis man on 6 felony counts on Friday in connection with the sexual assaults of 2 IU students and a shootout with a Bloomington police officer back in 2014. Valen Glazebrook is expected to spend the rest of his life in prison along with his accomplice, Michael DeWeese, who was sentenced to over 100 years in prison in 2016. The two reportedly broke into a residence at 12th and Indiana Avenue in Bloomington and sexually assaulted 2 IU students at gunpoint. A third roommate called the police, and a single officer was fired upon when he chased the men out of the residence. Both DeWeese and Glazebrook were 19 at the time. Another man, Jesse Benty Torres, allegedly the getaway driver, is expected to appear in a Monroe County court next Tuesday.
The Indiana legislature is considering passage of a bill that would expand the rates and lending practices for so-called payday loans. The Indiana Institute for Working Families, Aaron Macy, says House Bill 1319 would expand the potential interest borrowers could be charged over 300%.
Senate Bill 325 is a bill to cap current 2-week payday loan product, which can reach 391% APR, cap that loan product at 36% APR. The second bill is a House bill, House Bill 1319, and that bill not only keeps the current payday loan product, but expands payday lending into a new space, into installment lending with a 45% annual interest rate, but loaded with fees that will drive the APR over 200%. So these will be higher cost, longer term loans at 200% APR, just as damaging as a small payday loan at 391.
Macy says an expansion of payday lending targets low income families.
The median payday borrower makes $22,000 a year. Generally, that's not enough income to be self-sufficient to meet your basic needs, let alone take on this kind of high-cost debt. So what we see happening with both payday lending and with high-cost installment lending in other states is that low-income borrowers take on these loans. They ultimately oftentimes default or go into bankruptcy. But because the APR is so high, the lender still turns a profit, regardless of the damage they cause to the borrowers.
House Bill 1319 is currently in the Indiana Senate for consideration.
The Indiana Senate Environmental Affairs Committee voted down a measure today that would have limited the control of local governments, municipalities in the state to regulate industrial runoff. House Bill 1096 was voted down 6-5 in the committee this afternoon. The bill would have made it illegal to make more stringent regulations on runoff and construction waste than necessary for construction companies to get permits from the Indiana Department of Environmental Management. Dr. Indra Frank, Water Policy Director for the Hoosier Environmental Council, issued a statement which reads, quote, House Bill 1096 would have limited the authority of local government when it comes to construction site runoff, which is a significant source of sediment pollution. While this is a major victory for protection of Indiana's lakes and rivers, the Hoosier Environmental Council will remain vigilant for the bill language reemerging during the remainder of the 2018 Indiana General Assembly, unquote.
Two bills that aim to protect the state's forest have been defeated in the Indiana legislature. House Bill 1292, authored by Representative Matt Pierce of Bloomington, would have set aside 10% of the state's forest for old-growth trees. That bill failed this month in a 50-35 vote on the House floor. Another bill, Senate Bill 275, which was sponsored by Republican lawmakers, failed to come up for a vote in the Committee on Natural Resources. The Indiana Department of Natural Resources, or DNR, says that logging of timber in state forests has seen a fourfold increase this year.
The Indiana Department of Transportation is unveiling a new website for motorists to file complaints and report potholes. In.foryou.com is a state-sponsored customer service tool the department says will allow for them to streamline feedback. Customer calls and online complaints can be submitted through a web browser, email, online form, or through NDOT's app, according to the department. As of press time, there was no comment from NDOT with regards to how much the project cost. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Jada Lucas.
And I'm Leanne Morose. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Jeff Isaac is a noted and outspoken professor at Indiana University's School of Political Science. He's the past editor of the academic journal Political Science, and has written countless articles for scholarly publications and numerous books. The road he took to academia was never straight. A kid growing up in Queens, New York City, he played stickball and did his best to get out of piano lessons. Now, he's also an accomplished jazz musician. He talked about music with Michael Glab on last week's edition of Big Talk.
Not only are you a guy walking around with a mortarboard and a robe all the time and cracking kids over the knuckles with your ruler, but you tickle those keys occasionally. You are a jazz keyboardist.
I am.
The Postmodern Jazz Quartet. Yeah. Who's all in that?
The band was started by my colleague and friend Jonathan Elmer and I, who teaches English at IU.
Mm-hmm.
And the original members of the band were Jonathan and I and Dan Deckard on drums and Ron Kadish on bass. And then Nate Johnson joined us on sax. And then Pat Harbison joined us on trumpet. And Rebecca Fagan sang with us for a while. So we played for a while as a septet. Then we played as a sextet. We played as a quintet. Right now, for a variety of complicated reasons, the only person who is regularly playing with me consistently is Pat Harbison. The Postmodern Jazz Quartet now consists primarily of me and Pat Harbison. Jeremy Allen usually plays bass, but sometimes he can't make the gigs, and other people, Hannah Marks or other people, sub for him. Chris Parker often plays drums with us, but sometimes Dan Deckard plays drums with us. Jonathan Elmer has been living in Chicago a lot mm-hmm. for the past couple of years, so he hasn't been playing very much with us lately, but I think he's going to be coming back here, and hopefully will be playing more with us. So
there's the core duo and a revolving cast.
That could be said. The one person really who's always been in the PMJQ consistently is me.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's partly because a lot of other people have other musical projects. This has been, and for me, this has been my thing musically. But I think that the band kind of has an identity of its own. From the very start, we joked about the fact that people would say, "What, you play postmodern jazz?" And we would say, "No, we play modern jazz, but we're a postmodern quartet in the sense that there's a shifting number of people associated with us. There's no fixity in our identity as a quartet, and that's always been true. There's a kind of music that we play. We play basically kind of post-bop jazz, and I think that the band has an identity regardless of who's playing in it, and that's been a great thing about the band, and I think it's why we've consistently had regular gigs like for the past 10 or so years.
Was the stickball kid playing piano?
Oh, absolutely. But the stickball kid, first of all, the stickball kid took classical piano lessons and learned a ton, but hated to practice. And the stickball kid, for the first 2 years that he took piano lessons, I guess starting when he was 8, he didn't have a piano. So a neighbor, a terrific woman named Bella Goldman, she used to let me come into her house and practice the piano. And what I would do is go in there and basically sit around there and not practice the piano and then come home and tell my mother that I practiced the piano.
I was there.
But I was always playing the piano, and I loved the piano. And I've particularly always loved improvisational music. I'm not big on composed music, although I do compose some music. And while I can read music, I'm a terrible sight reader, and I've pretty much always played by ear.
Mm-hmm.
But I was always playing piano since I was 8.
When you get back into your car after we're finished here, what are you going to listen to?
I have a terrific CD that I've been listening to actually for years. It's called Quintessence. It was one of the last recordings made by Chet Baker before he died.
Mm.
Chet Baker basically played a lot throughout Europe, and particularly in Stockholm, with Stan Getz, who he had played with many times in his career, and a rhythm section of Jim McNeely on piano, who's terrific, George Mraz on bass, and Victor Lewis on drums. I listen to that a lot. I sing along with the solos on that album, and I've been working on some of those tunes. I'll probably listen to that.
You know, that's interesting. Stan Getz, one of my favorite discs, and it's practically worn out, that I have now is a compact jazz disc with Stan Getz and Astrid Gilberto.
I
love that.
It's fantastic. That's
yeah.
You know, that's what made Stan Getz famous.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Stan Getz is, I think, one of the great jazz musicians who kind of crossed over into another genre. And some of the tunes, some of the bossa nova tunes that he recorded, like A Girl from Ipanema, really became kind of hits beyond jazz. You know, Stan Getz also was like a major bebop and then post-bop saxophonist. He was one of the important figures in the so-called cool jazz movement.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting to me about him is that he employed a number of great pianists as his sidemen. Chick Corea played with him. And I just mentioned Jim McNeely. Actually, one of his sidemen was a guy named Andy Laverne, who actually I met last year at the Jamie Abersole Jazz Camp in Louisville, Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And Andy is a terrific pianist, very well known, very well recorded. And we became friends. And actually, I take FaceTime piano lessons with Andy Laverne now. He's a terrific teacher. I love working with him. So, you know, Stan Getz has had many interesting bands over the years.
That was IU professor and jazz musician Jeff Isaac, speaking with WFHB correspondent Michael Glab. Tune in to Big Talk with Michael Glab every Thursday afternoon at 5:30 p.m. right here on WFHB.
Support for WFHB comes from Lauren Woodbuilders. Lauren Woodbuilders is a family-owned company that sources local materials and local craftsmen to minimize environmental impact and sustain community. More information is available online at laurenwoodbuilders.com.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring tales of inspiration from local citizens who stand up for what they believe in and encouraging you to find your cause, live your passion, make a difference, volunteer.
Hi, my name is Sarah Yang, and I volunteer with Global Gifts and Mother Hubbard's Cupboard through the Monroe County Youth Council. I'm currently 16 years old, and I go to Bloomington High School South. The first volunteer experience that I had was in middle school when I joined Builders Club. I've always enjoyed the feeling after doing a good deed or simply helping somebody out. However, I had no idea that my 40 hours of community service would accumulate to become 400 hours. Not only am I helping others through volunteering, I feel as though volunteering has helped me better myself with the skills I've acquired through the process. I remember about 2 years ago, a good friend of mine asked me to start volunteering with her at a store called Global Gifts. I had never heard of Global Gifts, nor did I know what it was or what they did, but I willingly took her offer. I later realized that this was an amazing decision that I made. Global Gifts is a nonprofit fair trade organization that sells handmade products made by impoverished artisans and producers from countries all around the world. Global Gifts relies on a few staff members and a group of volunteers like me to keep the store thriving. Serving at Global Gifts is a great experience, and I'm glad to be a part of the organization to know that by volunteering and helping sell products to consumers, I'm supporting a cause that's keeping communities alive and helping them prosper gives me a feeling of satisfaction. I love the fact that we're providing hope and opportunities for people in need through every purchase, as it provides income, fair wages, gender equality, and so much more for them. Global Gifts has opened my eyes to ways I can be of help to the world at large, but Mother Hubbard's Cupboard, on the other hand, has given me a chance to directly serve my community. Mother Hubbard's Cupboard's mission is to ensure all people to have access to healthy and nutritious whole foods. I usually work in the pantry where I stock a variety of foods. I love being able to witness firsthand patrons coming in empty-handed and leaving with their bags of food, knowing that it's going to go home to their families. Thanks for listening. I'm Sarah Yang, and I volunteer with Global Gifts and Mother Hubbard's Cupboard.
You may visit the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network website to see a full organization profile at bloomington.in.gov/volunteer. Now here's a rundown of current volunteer opportunities in Bloomington and Monroe County.
For the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake with three featured volunteer opportunities for the week. Snuggles, cuddles, and headbutts are the benefits of being a cat care volunteer at the Brown County Humane Society in Nashville. Volunteers and staff participate in daily morning rounds to clean cat condos, supply new blankets and toys, swap out litter boxes, and fill food and water. A commitment of one 9 a.m. to noon shift on a regular repeating schedule is requested. Or Opportunity House Charity Thrift Store on West 11th Street in Bloomington invites you to come check them out. Literally, several reliable volunteers are needed to commit to regular weekly or monthly 3-hour Saturday cashier shifts. All store proceeds benefit Monroe County United Ministries. And finally, the IU Office of International Development is seeking host families for visiting Indonesian high school students and adult educators, who will be in Bloomington from April 6th through the 20th to learn about community involvement, diversity, leadership, and civic responsibility. And that's a look at just some of the ways you can connect to your community through volunteering. For WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. You may visit bloomington.in.gov/volunteer to find and sign up for local volunteer opportunities. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Brooks.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin and Jonah Chester in partnership with CatSuite from Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
Activate is produced by Lucy Shake from the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Chris Martin. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lumsdane, Scott Smadke, and Danny Graff. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Leanne Morose.
And I'm Jada Lucas. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news, programming online at WFHB.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@WFHB.org.
Stay tuned for KiteLine, a program amplifying the voices of those within Indiana's prison system. Coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@WFHB.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at WFHB.org and catch live broadcast of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.